From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
Let me ask you, you've talked about codifying Roe v. Wade. That would obviously require 60 votes in the Senate, a majority of the House. That's a big leap. We don't have that yet. If that's not possible to codify it in the House, what do you do?
I think we need to take a look at the filibuster, to be honest with you.
That was Vice President Kamala Harris at a CNN-sponsored town hall meeting in Pennsylvania last night. While her remarks may be lost in the debate over abortion, there's much, much more to her suggestion. What impact would eliminating the filibuster have in a often narrowly divided Senate? We're going to explore that with North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer in just a moment. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. Glad to have you along. Well, even some legacy media figures weren't convinced by Vice President Harris's performance.
Well, I'll just tell you what I'm hearing from people who I have been talking to, and that is that if her goal was to close the deal, they're not sure she did that.
That was CNN's Dana Bash last night with reaction to the town hall meeting. The presidential race is tightening, and polls actually show the Harris campaign may be stalling. Also, early voter turnout is very strong. With just a week and a half left until the election, nearly 30 million ballots have already been cast, and frankly, that's good news. And I again remind you to be prepared to cast your vote if you've not already done so, and to help you make sure it is an informed ballot. An informed vote, we have a free voter toolkit. So to get your voter toolkit, simply text the word toolkit, one word, to 67742. That's toolkit, one word, to 67742. And at your fingertips, you'll have a comparison of the presidential candidates. You'll have a party platform comparison. And you'll also have access to a personalized voter guide based upon your zip code. Again, text the word toolkit to 67742. Well, voter concerns over illegal immigration are also driving turnout. Homeland Security has acknowledged that 100 to 600 individuals linked to a violent Venezuelan gang have entered the United States. Now, the border crisis isn't just impacting peace of mind of citizens, it's costing taxpayers as well. According to the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the border situation cost American taxpayers more than $150 billion last year alone. We'll get some more insight on this from Georgia Congressman Andrew Clyde. We'll also dive into how Planned Parenthood is involved in putting abortion on the ballot in 10 states. Karen Bowling, Executive Director of the Nebraska Family Alliance, will join us in analyzing the Nebraska ballot measures. And next, the left loves science when they can manipulate it for their ideological purposes. But when they can't, what do? Well, they sit on it. A taxpayer-funded $10 million study reportedly found that experimental drugs and surgeries do not improve the mental health of children experiencing gender dysphoria, despite claims to the contrary. So where's the study? Well, Dr. Quentin Van Meter from the American College of Pediatricians will join us to tell us. And finally, we turn to Cuba, where Hurricane Oscar struck as a Category 1 storm on Sunday. Already crippled by economic turmoil, the Marxist government's poor infrastructure left millions without power or food. Could this spark change in Cuba? Dr. A.J. Nolte from Regent University will offer his perspective. So stay tuned for these conversations and much more right here on this Thursday edition of Washington Watch, and be sure and check out the website, tonyperkins.com. Well, in an effort to boost her stalled campaign, Vice President Kamala Harris appeared at a CNN town hall-style event last night, where included in her usual torrent of word salad answers came a comment that further clarified her commitment to abortion on demand. When pressed by CNN's Anderson Cooper on how she would achieve her pro-abortion agenda, Harris called again for ending the filibuster, the longstanding Senate procedure that protects the minority party and the country from majority tyranny and encourages productive debate and consensus. Eliminating this safeguard would do more than allow the left to pursue its abortion agenda. It would go much, much further. Where would it take us? Well, joining me now to discuss this is Senator Kevin Cramer from North Dakota. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator Cramer, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be with another man of the House as we talk about the Senate.
Well, let's talk, Senator, about the impact eliminating the filibuster would have, not just on the Senate. I mean, this is not some kind of archaic rule that, you know, people just want to hang on to. This was by design for specific purposes. Tell us about it.
That's right. And really, the purpose is, you know, by the way, consistent with the purpose of the Senate from the founders in the first place. In fact, coming from a small state like North Dakota, I'm often grateful to Benjamin Franklin for calling for prayer at the time of the Constitutional Convention when they were arguing to the point of almost a complete meltdown over whether we'd have a unicameral Congress with based on, you know, state power or based on population power, and they settled for both. And so they created the Senate to be the firewall against the passions of the zealots, a firewall to prevent the impulses of the much more rambunctious House of Representatives that I was honored to serve in for 6 years. But Tony, there should be no mistake. It's not just the filibuster. They'd like to get rid of the Senate basically in general. They resent that a guy from the center of the North American continent with 780,000 people would have the equal power to, say, Chuck Schumer or to some other senator, say, in California. And remember, too, that here's what I can't get over. The thing she's the most passionate about, Tony, if you just think about that, it's so disgusting. It shows you why we need a filibuster, why we need a firewall.
Right. It is fascinating, disturbing, all at the same time, that this has become her number one policy objective is abortion on demand until birth, and she's willing to do away with anything that gets in the way. But elimination of the filibuster will lead to court packing. That's something else that the left wants. They want to dilute the court because of the conservative current court. So they would want to put 13 members on the court. They would want to add D.C. As a state,
and
Puerto Rico. And so then we have four additional senators almost ensuring a perpetual left-leaning Senate.
Well, and therein lies the current problem, but there would be lots of other ones. Because if they just had 2 years, say, without a filibuster and a majority in both chambers, even a very narrow majority, they could literally make permanent majorities for the Democrats in both the House and the Senate and the courts. And then, even if we got the filibuster back or if the American public came to their senses, you still couldn't overcome the damage that was done in that one moment, that one crisis moment where the issue was so critical, like federal law codifying abortion on demand right up until birth. These are not insignificant issues, and rarely, and by the way, you'll often hear them say, well, we just need it for this one thing.
Right.
For Nancy Pelosi, it was federalizing elections.
Right.
Thank goodness, you know, that we had two Democratic senators in Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema who would not blow up the filibuster. And by the way, one of those senators actually supported the legislation, but also supported the integrity of the filibuster and the firewall of the Senate.
Senator Cramer, you've been very, very supportive of Israel. You've been outspoken on it. You've actually introduced, you're preparing to introduce legislation to stand with Israel. I want to play a clip from last night, town hall meeting, where Anderson Cooper asked about the issue of Israel. Play clip number 10.
He has said that he's casting himself as a protector of Israel. Do you believe you would be more pro-Israel than Donald Trump?
I believe that Donald Trump is dangerous.
That was her response to every question. She did not answer any policy questions. She only attacked Donald Trump. You've been in the Senate. You were there when Donald Trump was there. You were there when the Abraham Accords were negotiated and came into place, when there was peace in the Middle East. What do you see today? And in your opinion, who has a better handle on the Middle East?
Well, you've just described two visions, one of Donald Trump's, one of the Biden-Harris administration, and two actual records. And clearly, the world was much better off under Donald Trump. And I think it's basic. I think it comes down to projection of strength. Donald Trump was able to negotiate the Abraham Accords because he came from a position of strength. Israel knew that we always had their backs, and Israel's enemies knew that we always had Israel's backs. And now they're wanting to appease the Arab states. They want to appease our enemies. They want to appease our friends. They want to appease our frenemies. And the problem with that is that every dictator, every despot in the world looks at the United States and says, we can run all over these people. And so, and by the way, and their allies. And that kind of weak talk is ripe for danger, not just in the Middle East, but throughout the world. And we're seeing it play out. But when it comes to Israel, Tony, it's not difficult. It's biblical, as you know. My Lutheran mother would come out of her grave and primary me if I ever did anything but stand with Israel, just so you know. It's that foundational to me and really to our country and should be.
You're absolutely right. I agree 100%. And as we distance ourselves from Israel or become a stumbling block to Israel, we put ourselves, I think, in a very precarious situation. And I'm speaking both politically, geopolitically, right. Yes. Also from a security standpoint, but spiritual as well.
That's right.
You're going to introduce legislation, Stand with Israel Act,
right.
Once the House and the Senate reconvene in a few weeks. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so what we're seeing now is movements within the United Nations, as you know, and of course the Palestinian state, being part of that, or the possibility of all of this. And one of the first things that the enemies of Israel want to do is diminish Israel's impact or role on the United Nations, either get rid of them altogether out of the United Nations or somehow restrict their role at the United Nations. And my view of it is simply this: if the United Nations does anything to prevent Israel's involvement or to restrict their involvement in any way, shape, or form, it should be the last dollar they get from the American taxpayers. And so, what does the United States have to offer? We have to offer our resources, and we shouldn't be offering our resources to an organization that is so belligerent and so anti-Israel and so anti-Semitic as the United Nations, should they pull a stunt like this. So it's a pretty harsh piece of legislation. It's pretty clear. It's pretty strong. If you don't stand with Israel, the United States can't stand with you.
Well, when you introduce it, we'll have you back on to talk more about it. We've got about a minute and a half left. I want to get your response to the leak in the Pentagon of the U.S. intelligence that was tracking Israeli preparation for a retaliatory strike against Iran. That apparently has now been put on hold based upon the leak of that information. It appears Israel has to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah. Well, they better find out where the leak came from. You know, they still say they don't know whether it was a hack or whether it was, into the system, or whether it was somebody within the United States, within the Department of Defense, that leaked this information. They should, first of all, get to the bottom of that leak, while at the same time making sure that we assist Israel in whether it's new plans or new tactics, new strategies, whatever the case might be. But I'm afraid that there are some bad actors, and we need to ferret that out.
I would agree. Again, this puts us in a very precarious situation. If we're leaking sensitive information, top secret this information was,
That's
on
right.
Israel, our ally in the Middle East. Senator Kramer, always great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Always my pleasure. Thank you, Tony.
Folks, again, this is a major issue in the election. I hope it helps shape and inform your vote. And we have resources to show you where the two candidates, where the parties stand on the issue of Israel. It's one of the defining issues, I believe, for Christians. Text the word toolkit to 67742. All right, after the break, we're going to look at the financial strain that the Biden-Harris administration's border crisis has put on Americans. That's next.
Not be discouraged. Don't lose heart. Don't lose the faith. Stand now strong, because the Lord has given us the great privilege of living in a time when our choices matter, when our lives matter, when our courage matters. So let's stand together and save this great country. God bless the United States of America.
The American Republic has a freedom like no other. It has roots in the scriptures far more than any other heritage. And if we, as followers of Jesus and conservatives, don't defend it, who will?
Neutrality is not an option. There are many Christians who believe that if we just keep our heads down, if we just don't say the wrong thing, that somehow we will come out of this unscathed. You're naive if you think that, because what they want from us is not our silence. What they want from us is our submission.
Part of the dilemma of Christianity in our generation is that we've relied a little too much on human wisdom and human reasoning, human strength, human resource, and we've relied too little on the power of God and God's ability to open doors that we can't open and do things that we couldn't even hope to begin to do.
This may not be an easy task, but we are living in a moment of challenge, but also of great opportunity. And we know always that we are not alone, that His Spirit empowers us and protects us, and that He can do the unimaginable. Dobbs, after all, was never supposed to happen.
Father, we thank You. You have entrusted us with this moment in history, and I pray that we would be found faithful, and that as a result of our faithfulness to You, that thousands, millions would come into the kingdom as they would experience the forgiveness of sin and the new life that is found only in Jesus Christ. Amen.
Hello, I'm Jody Heiss, president of FRC Action. Here in America, we thank God for the right to vote, and we can all agree on the importance of this upcoming election. Many of us want to support candidates who share our values, but we're not comfortable supporting the big national political organizations. Well, we have a solution for supporting candidates through FRC Action's Faith, Family, and Freedom Fund. Being a super PAC, it allows for unlimited individual and corporate donations, so we can endorse and fund campaigns for people who share our values. By giving to this fund, we're able to pull all of our contributions together and support and endorse like-minded candidates. That's how we move the needle. So let's be the best stewards possible and get the most out of our political contributions by uniting our efforts. For more information or to contribute, visit faithfamilyfreedomfund.org. Thank you so much, and God bless you.
Welcome back to this Thursday edition of Washington Watch. And again, let me give you the link to get your free voter toolkit so that you can cast an informed ballot. Toolkit to 67742. One word, toolkit to 67742. It even includes a personalized voter guide. Just put in your zip code and you'll have a personalized voter guide. According to a recent study from the Federation for American Immigration Reform, the Biden-Harris administration's migrant crisis cost American taxpayers more than $150 billion last year alone. And even though the federal government picks up some of that staggering tab with your tax money, the brunt of that burden is borne by local and state governments. We've talked about on the program before how local school districts are being overrun and burdened, and as a result, education standards are falling. Now, this also includes additional costs for law enforcement, tasked with monitoring the hundreds of known gang members now active in U.S. communities. You know, will voters recognize the damage caused by the Biden-Harris border policy? Joining now to discuss this, Congressman Andrew Clyde. He serves on the House Appropriations Committee and represents the 9th Congressional District of Georgia. Congressman Clyde, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you on Washington Watch. Thank you.
So, Congressman, $150 billion, that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, it's not. And if we continue with this invasion on our southern border, it's only going to grow. We're going to have more expense, and it's going to cost the American taxpayer more money.
We look at the dollars. It's easy to quantify the dollars, but we also see the Department of Homeland Security acknowledging that somewhere between 100, they placed 100 on the watch list, but they estimate upwards of maybe 600 have come through associated with this Venezuelan gang that is brutal, bloody, and violent. I mean, our streets are not safe. Our communities are not safe.
I agree with you 100%, Tony. I mean, and we have seen that here in Athens, Georgia, where a Venezuelan brutally murdered 22-year-old college student named Lakin Riley. We have, as President Trump said last night, I was at the Trump rally, when he talked about Tren de Aragua, the gang. Venezuela has opened their prisons and is flooding our country with their criminals, and we are seeing an uptick in crime because of it. And the the Biden-Harris administration is allowing these criminals into our country. Over 600,000 have come in with prior criminal records. You know, many of them, over 10,000 of them with prior murder convictions, and over 10,000 of them with prior firearm convictions. I mean, these are not nice people. We should never be allowing, you know, additional criminals into our country, but that's what the Biden-Harris administration is doing. And we're seeing the effect up close and personal here with the increase in crime, brutal crime.
This is a policy that is set by the executive branch. Now, Congress obviously controls the purse strings, but as we've witnessed over the last 2 years, we've got a slim majority in the House. Democrats control the Senate, but the policy is being driven by the White House. That appears the only way that immigration policy will change in this country is to change the occupants of the White House.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with you. We need to change the occupants of the White House. And I know that President Trump, you know, during his prior administration, we had the most secure border and the most secure country that we have seen in my lifetime. And now President Biden's policies, as you mentioned, it's policy over personality. President Biden's policies, with Kamala Harris being the last person in the room there, they have created such a wide open border. Over 10 million illegal aliens have crossed that border. 2.5 million additional are gotaways that we don't know who they are. We don't know how many gang members have come into this country, but we know they have wreaked havoc in our states. New York is having a huge issue with them. The city of New York, Aurora, Colorado, where they've taken over apartment complexes. This is a disaster for our country, but I know President Trump, he'll stop it.
Andrew Clyde, you mentioned the incident there in Georgia that took place with Lakeland Riley. What are you hearing as you're out in your district, and I think you've been traveling around the country as well, helping out some others? What are the issues that you hear? I mean, we see the polls. We see what but I don't trust what I see in the polls. What are you hearing on the street as you're out at events, shaking hands, talking to people, listening to them? What are the issues driving voter turnout in this election?
Well, I'll tell you, the number one issue is inflation. We saw under President Trump's economy, the greatest economy in the literally my lifetime for this nation. We have seen 40-year high inflation with the Biden-Harris administration. So that's the number one issue right there. But right behind it is the border. That's the issue that we see that is bringing waves of crime, increased crime, into our country. If we don't have a secure border, then we do not actually have a secure nation. And we saw that under President Trump with a very secure border, and now we have a wide open border, and people from all over the world are coming in knowing that they will not be deported because this administration wants to flood our country with illegal aliens and permanently change the way our country is.
So, Congressman Clyde, is that why Kamala Harris is talking about abortion? Because the policies and decisions made by the Biden-Harris administration on the economy has led to greater inflation, and their border policy has been a disaster, so that leaves them to talk about abortion?
Well, literally, you know, as you see when Kamala Harris has an interview, she deflects every question to criticize President Trump. They think abortion is the one winning issue that they might have, and so they're pushing that as well. But you have to remember, government is instituted among men to protect individual rights, and God, our Creator, gave us the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And we understand that through the Declaration of Independence. What actually the birth certificate of our nation told us about, you know, confirmed that about life.
And we need to be protecting it. And I think this is, I believe that is an issue in this election cycle from folks I'm talking to. I know inflation is hitting the family budget. The border has made people insecure. But when you listen to Kamala Harris and what they're advancing on this radical abortion policy, I believe that's gotten the attention of a lot of pro-life voters. Congressman Andrew Clyde, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Always great to see you and get insights from you.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you on Washington Watch.
All right. And folks, again, I want to make you aware of a tool we have available for you to help you cast an informed vote. So you can see where the candidates stand on these major issues, whether it's the border, whether it's religious freedom, whether it's life. whatever it might be, text the word toolkit to 67742. All right, more Washington Watch straight ahead.
Everything we do begins as an idea. Before there can be acts of courage, there must be the belief that some things are worth sacrificing for. Before there can be marriage, there is the idea that man should not be alone. Before there was freedom, there was the idea that individuals are created equal. It's true that all ideas have consequences, but we're less aware that all consequences are the fruit of ideas. Before there was murder, there was hate. Before there was a Holocaust, there was the belief by some people that other people are undesirable. Our beliefs determine our behavior, and our beliefs about life's biggest questions determine our worldview. Where did I come from? Who decides what is right and wrong? What happens when I die? Our answers to these questions explain why people see the world so differently. Debates about abortion are really disagreements about where life gets its value. Debates over sexuality and gender and marriage are really disagreements about whether the rules are made by us or for us. What we think of as political debates are often much more than that. They're disagreements about the purpose of our lives and the source of truth. As Christians, our goal must be to think biblically about everything. Our goal is to help you see beyond red and blue, left and right, to see the battle of ideas at the root of it all. Our goal is to equip Christians with a biblical worldview and help them advance and defend the faith in their families, communities, and the public square. Cultural renewal doesn't begin with campaigns and elections. It begins with individuals turning from lies to truth. But that won't happen if people can't recognize a lie and don't believe truth exists. We want to help you see the spiritual war behind the political war, the truth claims behind the press release, and the forest from the trees.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. I want to continue our series of walking through each of the 10 states where abortion is being placed on the ballot on November the 5th. Now, Nebraska is unique among these states as competing ballot initiatives offer voters a distinct choice on the direction for their state. Now, all the other states have pro-abortion amendments on the ballot. Well, you got a choice in Nebraska. The abortion industry is not only attempting to enshrine a right to abortion in the Nebraska Constitution, their ballot initiative opens the door to a number of extreme policies, including legalizing late-term dismemberment abortions, eliminating health and safety standards, removing parental notification requirements, and paving the way for taxpayer-funded abortion. But there is a competing choice, Initiative 434, that Nebraskans can support. So joining me now to discuss this is Karen Bowling, Executive Director of Nebraska Family Alliance. Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, Tony, it's great to be on the Washington Watch with you this evening and grateful to have the conversation about protecting babies in Nebraska.
Well, it's the only state that has a pro-life initiative on the ballot in this election. So tell us about the two competing amendments that will be on the initiatives that will be on the ballot.
Well, Initiative 434 is really common sense protection. It's defending parents' rights. It's keeping our daughters safe. It's preserving parental notification to protect parents and their daughters. It's also safeguarding health and safety standards to ensure only licensed physicians or providing health care to women in need and in crisis. It also makes certain we do not fund abortions here. It makes certain that there is no path forward to have tax-funded abortions. And it also, I think, is really important because the way the language for 439 was written, the first six words say, all persons shall have a fundamental right to abortion. All persons, that means minors. That means also third party, so men can abuse women and even traffickers. We want to protect our children, and so that's why we have a competing ballot measure, Initiative 434. And what's important on 439 it does, as you said, it jeopardizes women in health and safety. It opens up the door for grievous pain capable legislation that we have to be removed. It really deregulates the abortion industry here in Nebraska.
And puts that into the Constitution, making it a right, which this is what they're doing in the other states. They're taking and putting into the Constitution where lawmakers cannot even address issues that 434 will protect: parental rights, notification laws, basic common sense measures that have been fully vetted and adopted over the last four decades in states all across the country. Talk about the campaign that's underway there in Nebraska. I mean, what we've seen in other states is that those pushing this pro-abortion amendment in these various states are very deceptive in how they're presenting it. Is that happening in Nebraska?
Absolutely, that is happening. So as they don't even define pregnant woman, they say all persons shall have a fundamental right to abortion. They also say without interference from the state or its political subdivisions. Now that in itself is very vague and confusing, because on first read, you might think, oh, well, I don't want the government interfering. Actually, that gives permission for no government interference. In other words, if 439 is enshrined into our abortion, there is no recourse that the legislative body can do. It is harmful. And as you all know, I know your listeners are tracking all of these 10 states across the nation. Vague laws bring harm to real people.
Right. And we've seen, because it's almost the same language in every state. It's very vague, nondescript, open to interpretation, which means the court will ultimately have the say on what these things mean. And in most states, the judiciary is, not conservative. They're going to come down on the wrong side of these issues. So very quickly, we got about a minute and a half left, Karen. Give instructions to all of our listeners. We've got a lot of them in Nebraska. Give them instructions leading up to November the 5th.
Well, I encourage all of your listeners, and especially Nebraskans, to go to NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. It explains both ballot measures, and we are encouraging you to vote for Initiative 434 and vote against or no on Initiative 439. Obstacles are before us, but we view this as God-breathed opportunities. We have an opportunity to protect 50 years of legislation that protects the preborn, and it also gives us an opportunity to keep expanding those protections. We cannot lose this moment. Nebraskans, this is the time to be courageous, stand up, and go vote. Vote for 434 and against 439.
All right, Karen, well said. Thanks so much for joining us today, and thank you for the great work you do there in Nebraska.
Thank you so much, Tony, and to all of your listeners. May God have mercy on this nation.
Amen. Amen. And folks, if you live in one of the other states, we have a resource available for you as well. We've got a publication that lays out what these 10 ballot initiatives do, the states that they're in. You might not be in one of those states, but you might want to share it with someone who does live in one of those states. Text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. All right, after the break, we're going to take a look at Cuba and what's happening there after Hurricane Oscar came through.
Jesus said in John 15, "These things I've spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full." In 2024, in these divided and uncertain times, how can this be possible? By abiding in Him through His Word. At Family Research Council, we want to help you do that, which is the reason for the Stand on the Word Bible Reading Plan. In just 10 to 15 minutes each day, you will have read the entire Bible in just 2 years. But more importantly, you will be abiding in Him daily. Find our Bible reading plan at frc.org/Bible and join Tony Perkins each weekday for a 10-minute devotional inspired by the daily reading, and designed to encourage you on this journey through the Bible. Listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, the grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God will stand forever.
The world is hurting. Streets are filled with crime. Families are broken. Sin is celebrated, and God is mocked. Everywhere we look, the wages of our sin are on full display. As Christians, we know that surrender to God's will is the solution to our biggest problems, but not everyone agrees. Even in church, we hear people say the most important thing is to be tolerant, that we shouldn't impose a morality on other people, and that loving our neighbor means celebrating what they do. But you can't do that. It's not that you don't love your neighbor, you do. But you care about God's opinion more than your neighbor's opinion, and this makes you different. In fact, sometimes it makes you feel alone, like you're the only one. But there is good news. You are not alone, not even close. Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, go to frc.org/sagecon and take the quiz to find out. The world is hurting, and we have the solution. We can't do it alone, but we can do it if we work together. That's what we're working toward every day. Join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon. SageCon to learn more. That's SageCon. SageCon to learn more.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Be sure and get your toolkit so you'll be able to cast an informed ballot. Text the word toolkit, one word, toolkit, one word, to 67742. All right, our word for today comes from 1 Kings chapter 18, where Elijah confronts the people of Israel. How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, follow him. The people remained silent. Elijah then said, I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. So two key lessons emerge here. When you stand for truth, you may stand alone, or at least feel like you're alone. Elijah faced that reality, and so do believers today. Second, there is no neutral ground. Elijah's challenge is clear. If the Lord is God, serve him. If not, follow Baal. You can't do both. Jesus echoed this in Matthew chapter 12, verse 30. He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters. We can't follow both the world and the Lord. The idea that the absence of biblical truth and the Christian faith in public life is somehow neutral is absurd. There is no neutrality. Stand for biblical truth. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. This week, Hurricane Oscar struck Cuba, crippling the island's already struggling power grid. This energy crisis highlights what the communist Cuban regime has gone to great pains to hide. That is, the government-controlled economy and infrastructure are crumbling. Now, should America, from a foreign policy perspective, be concerned with what is happening just 90 miles off our coast? Joining me now with his analysis of what is going on is Dr. A.J. Nolte, Chair of the Government Graduate Program and Director of the International Development Master's Program at Regent University. Dr. Nolte, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony. Thanks, Tony. It's great to be here.
So what should we be watching in Cuba?
Well, there are a couple of different aspects. First of all, I think it would be hard for Americans looking at this to not draw a contrast between our own recent experience with hurricanes. Oscar hit Cuba, as I understand, as a Category 1. And, of course, we had even larger hurricanes with Milton and Helene that hit the United States. Now, obviously, the devastation from both of those is significant. But if you look at the response and even the fact that in Western North Carolina, areas that were without power, that were basically inaccessible, are getting power back relatively quickly. And when they didn't have power back, were getting resources in also very quickly. Whereas in Cuba, you're seeing signs of people, you know, just trying to get to government markets, you know, almost a scarcity of food, you know, very, very quickly after that. We could contrast also Milton, where, you know, Governor DeSantis, I think, wisely pre-positioned some power lines and linesmen to clean things up right after Milton and get power up and running in that area. So, you know, I think there's a very real contrast between the systems that exist. You mentioned the crumbling infrastructure. You know, Cuba's been a Marxist-Leninist country since the 1960s, the United States with free market capitalism. And it turns out that the prosperity that our friends on the left talk about with Cuba really only existed because of massive subsidies coming into Cuba from the Soviet Union during the Cold War. And so, you know, we see, I think, a very vivid demonstration of the difference between those two economic systems.
So we have that contrast in terms of, in fact, there's very little non-governmental organizations because they've pretty much suppressed the church there. So you don't have groups like Samaritan's Purse and others domestically working to help get families back online and supplied. But you also see, you mentioned the 1960s where there was the infusion of capital from the communist regimes to bolster Cuba. Is that a possibility, again, with their infrastructure crumbling, that we could see Russia, China, Venezuela, of course, Venezuela is having their own issues, move in right there 90 miles from our coast?
Yeah, so 2 points. Briefly, just to piggyback off your point on the faith based organizations. We are so used to Samaritan's Purse, Operation Blessing, Convoy of Hope, Catholic Charities, and others going in immediately after disasters that, you know, it takes any government, even a government like ours that's more free market oriented, a little bit longer to get in. That's not happening in Cuba. That is another key impact and key reason for those differences. In terms of other governments coming in, I think absolutely. We know that Russia, China, and Iran have all been heavily invested in Venezuela. We know that Russian troops and I believe forces also from Cuba and potentially China were supporting Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro against the democratically elected Juan Guaido, who was elected in 2017 in Venezuela. So keeping the Maduro regime, which is descended from Chavez, in power. And so we could very easily see a similar system in Cuba. And of course, China is very, very interested in increasing their influence in Latin America. Russia is interested in projecting power where it can. And so I would say that it is very possible that we could see China and Russia reaching out to try to prop up their allies in Cuba and also make infrastructure investments. And like you said, very, very close to America's shore, which would be, you know, there's a reason why the Cuban Missile Crisis happened, and a lot of that in the Cold War, and a lot of that was geography.
Well, we saw just months ago where Russian nuclear-capable subs were coming into Cuba. So this is not far-fetched to think that they could make this as an outpost.
Absolutely. And something that's very important for your listeners to understand. China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba may have ideological differences, but they're all committed to the decrease of American power and destroying American hegemony, which is why Russia is buying weapons now from Iran, China is heavily invested economically in Iran, and all of these countries have invested in Venezuela, and Cuba has also been tied in with the Venezuelan regime. So there's, even if there's not necessarily ideological uniformity, they all agree America's bad, America's the enemy, and free market capitalist democracy needs to be taken down a peg.
All right, so Dr. Nolte, we've kind of diagnosed the problem, the situation there from a foreign policy perspective, as well as domestic. I mean, I think this highlighting the differences between the two ideologies should affect our vote come November the 5th here in this country, because we're beginning to see the elements of that Marxist ideology emerge in our political system. But from a foreign policy perspective, with an eye on what's happening there, what should we be doing as a country?
So domestically, I think take seriously the people that have told us for decades that they see Cuba as a potential model. You know, when they talk about the Cuban healthcare system, keep in mind the fact that they can't even get the power back on, and you know, if that's what they want to bring here, take them seriously. From a foreign policy perspective, I think the U.S. needs to be aggressively countering the Russia-China-Iran alliance anywhere that is active, and that means Venezuela, and that means Cuba. And I think, you know, it's time to reconsider whether we are okay with a permanent failed socialist state 90 miles off of our shore that's going to continually be a place that people who don't like America are going to go to as a safe harbor. And I think, you know, we need to have a very serious discussion about that in the next administration after the election.
Very interesting. That's a good point. Dr. A.J. Nolte, I want to thank you for joining us. As always, appreciate your insights.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It is interesting. We'll have to continue to watch it. It's like a bad part of the neighborhood. People just go, and there's problems always surrounding it. You got to deal with it. You can't just ignore it. All right. I want to talk about something else in the time we have left. And it's this thing. It's this. The left loves science when they can manipulate it. All right. Since 2015, the federal government has designated nearly $10 million in taxpayer money to fund a study on the effects of puberty blockers on America's children, only to have the doctor leading the project, Dr. Olson Kennedy, refuse to publish the results after finding no evidence that they improve the mental health of these children. Now, Dr. Olson Kennedy, who has a long history of inflammatory public statements on gender issues, told reporters she fears the study could be weaponized or even used in court to stop the use of gender mutilation procedures. In other words, she wants to hide the results that show these practices do not help children, but potentially harm them. Joining me now to discuss this and more is pediatric endocrinologist Dr. Quentin Van Meter. He is the immediate past president, now executive committee member of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Van Meter, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Always glad to be on, Tony. Thanks so much for having me.
Any surprise that this $10 million study that didn't say what they wanted to say got shelved?
Well, it's interesting. This $10 million study started as a $5 million study under wraps at the NIH. No one could find it on the NIH funding information when it was first proposed. It is unlike any other study. It proposed looking at not intervening with a centralized protocol, but just gathering data from four centers, four transgender centers, Los Angeles, Chicago, Boston, and San Francisco. And they had these protocols in place for their own transgender kids, their own informed consent that the parents would sign. And what they did was just look at the data from this, from the outcomes of this. It was not an intervention in any way that was governed centrally. There was no uniformity necessarily in all four centers. But they were given $5 million to just look at this data and look at it over time for a period initially of 5 years. So the first 2 years' data were published a year ago, and it turned out that they were touting the strong benefits of the puberty blocking and cross-sex hormones. And they said, oh, by the way, we had a couple of suicides in the treated group, and maybe 11 kids were threatening suicide. Oh, well, but we really think this is working really, really well. And that got published in the New England Journal of Medicine, of all places, a formerly reputable medical journal. And it was touted as showing success of the interventions. Well, less than a year later, we've got Dr. Olson Kennedy admitting that something that Europe has known for the past 5 years, that the puberty blockers do not do anything to improve mental health. As a matter of fact, the British, in their study of the Tavistock data, showed that the puberty blockers actually caused emotional detriment to the patients in a number that essentially caused that country to eliminate the puberty blockers as a therapeutic modality in kids under the age of 18, essentially like all kids for all intents and purposes. So the Europeans have known this was the case. Dr. Olson Kennedy openly had derided that as nonsense, indicating in her discussions with people that Europe was still going full speed ahead treating kids with puberty blockers, that England was not indeed banning use of puberty blockers. And all of a sudden, she looks at her data and says, oh, darn, it doesn't show what we intended it to show. So we're just not going to publish it. Now, that is patently dishonest. You know, it shouldn't it doesn't pass the smell test. It freely admits that the protocol, which the only reason these kids are sent down this affirmation so-called pathway, is to save their lives from committing suicide, which they guaranteed would happen without intervention with puberty blockers.
That's now their strongest selling point. And this is where they even use this to guilt parents into going down this path, is it not?
Absolutely. I saw an interview with our good friend Billboard Chris, a Canadian gentleman who goes out and talks to students on campuses, and he was approached by a young lady who was essentially had her puberty blocked by Dr. Olson Kennedy before it started, or as it was just starting. She never experienced puberty on her own. She was given cross-sex hormones, and her breasts were cut off when she was 14 years of age. She's now 20. She's regretted everything. She said, I had no idea what was going to happen. It wasn't explained to me. She said, I went into the appointment, and in 30 minutes, Dr. Olson Kennedy essentially recommended puberty blockers, and that was it. And she was never interviewed in terms of her mental health or what her undercurrent problems were. Just blasé, we're going to do this, and we'll see what happens. So this experimentation clearly hasn't worked. Olson Kennedy admits it. This should be a signal to all the transgender centers in the United States, not just the four involved in the study, that it's time to shutter their doors, let these kids get back into the mental health arena where they belong. And that would be the message.
I mean, part of her concern that she articulated, Dr. Van Meter, was she was afraid this would be used to enter into the debate that's taking place in state legislatures across the country. But is that not the point of science? I mean, we have, and this doesn't stand on its, the results that she's hiding doesn't, they don't stand on their own, because you also have other studies that validate that. You mentioned the British. They had the case study, CASS study, rather, Dr. Hillary Cass, a 388-page report that debunks all of the stuff that actually she points to as justification for this.
Correct. So it's what she's predicting is that she's made a mistake and people are going to hold her accountable for it. And she's afraid they're going to hold her accountable. Well, it's time that they hold her accountable and all the people in her consortium who have been doing this to these children all these years. So this should be the turning point. This should be the tipping point of the whole issue. And if it isn't, we're a heap of trouble. Many, many more kids will be harmed irreparably.
I think that's an important point, final point we'll be able to make, is that she's been doing this for 17 years. And so to acknowledge at this point that she's been misleading these children for 17 years could even open her up to legal action, to civil action as a result. I mean, that could be part of her concern.
Well, I think what is it, she finally looked at the data and can't refute it. But they sort of blasé, you know, it didn't show that, it didn't show this. All of our data mining studies and convenience samples show that it's beneficial. So we're on the right side. I mean, I firmly believe that individual, Dr. Olson Kennedy, believes that she was on the right side of history on this. But now she's not. And that should, if she moves an inch beyond that today, I think she will be putting herself in legal jeopardy.
Well, it also shows that ideology, not science, drive their agenda.
Absolutely.
Dr. Van Meter, always great to see you, my friend. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks again, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining us as well. Let me remind you, these issues, while not directly, are indirectly on the ballot. This is being pushed by the federal government. This was funded by the government. Text Toolkit to 67742, Toolkit to 67742 to get your voter information. All right, we're out of time. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.